Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Steve Lenman. Ellen Brown will be on shortly. First, we want to go back to Tripoli, Libya, live to get another updated report from Mahdi Nazemroya. Mahdi is a Middle East and a Central Asian analyst. He's also a research associate for the Center for Research on Globalization. And for over 2 weeks now, Mahdi has been in the Tripoli area. I said yesterday, no one asked him to go. No one's paying him. No one's putting words in his mouth. He has nothing to gain remuneratively from being there. But he's there because he wants to see with his own eyes what's going on. He wants to write about it. He wants to report it so that people know exactly what's going on. And what is going on, as Mahdi explained yesterday, was these are hideous crimes of war and against humanity by Washington, the Obama administration, by their key allies in London and Paris, and by the other NATO partners that are participating in this conflict. And there were probably a few covert ones we don't know directly about, supplying arms or whatever. But this is a hideous operation going on. It has nothing to do with liberation. It has nothing to do with democratic values. It's all about conquest and exploitation. And when America goes to war, that's what it's all about. Forget that. Well, anybody listening to this program all the time understands that very well. I don't have to explain it. Mahdi, I welcome you back to get more information on what you see going on. Can I bring up one topic just at the top of the program?
Definitely, Steve.
Excuse me. Global Research has an article where they cite the International Committee on the Red Cross, the ICRC, talking about a growing humanitarian crisis throughout the area, the conflict area in the East and West, and specifically talking about a growing crisis in food. Hasn't happened yet, but it could emerge, and medical supplies a problem there, and it's almost like the conflict area is under siege, and that the West, and especially Washington, wants to harm the people of Libya by preventing this from coming in, to make them suffer enough to get them to want to stop this conflict and end it and surrender. Again, can you supply some more information on that?
You have it right on the bullseye, Steve. They are laying siege on this country. Tripoli, in all the major cities, as well as the Tripoli district. They are trying to block food from coming in the country. They are, actually. They're trying to make a currency shortage. One of the things that happened was Libya ordered... Libyan money is made inside Libya as well as in Britain. And an order was set out before the sanctions for payments. And under international law, the British should have sent them to Libya. It's only orders after the sanctions, the business transactions after the sanctions that can only be blocked. Anything before has to go through. So they block money from coming here. But I want to point out, one of the first places they bombed was the treasury building that makes Libyan banknotes, dinars, Libyan dinars. They bombed that. They deliberately try to have a currency shortage here. They bombed food facilities here. And they are laying siege on the country. They want to starve the country into submission. They want to break the soul of the people. They are trying to bomb them into submission. They're not bombing any military sites. It just took a day or two to bomb all the military sites. Listen here. The government of Libya does not have a strong military. This is not a military state. The military is very small. They bombed the military. Most of the people fighting are volunteers. I was at the checkpoints. There was over 50 checkpoints from the Tunisian frontier. I was in Tunisia before I came here, and there was over 50 checkpoints to get into Tripoli. These things were being manned by young men, old people, people who were trying to defend their country. This is not a hardened military force protecting the country. In fact, weapons have been distributed to the people here. It's the people that are fighting. That's the honest truth, all right? I'm not saying there isn't an opposition movement. There's a very small opposition movement that's augmented by foreign forces and mercenaries, all right? But they're a minority. They're not the majority in this country at all. Okay? So that's the truth. And they're trying to break this country's spirit. That is what is happening here. I'm here. I was in an NGO's office in a residential area, and they bombed a couple of days ago. All right? That's what they're doing here.
Marty, it really is shocking, and I have no doubt that they would target civilians, and it really is comparable in one respect to the siege that Gaza has been submitted to by Israel. So horrific that even when humanitarian people want to come either by sea or by land, Israel is blocking them, and of course the flotilla that has been trying to reach Gaza in recent days was blocked in Greek ports. They couldn't get out. I wrote 4 articles about it. Talk about a crime against humanity, Marty. And I referred to what's going on in Gaza as slow motion genocide. And apparently, that's the idea in Libya as well.
But yeah, this is their standard model. This is what the United States, France, Britain, there's NATO. This is the standard model. They did the same thing to Iraq. Did they not? Did they not starve Iraq? Did they not let medicine get through to children?
Absolutely.
This is the standard model, Steve. And I want to point out, you can see long lineups for gasoline because they're blocking that from coming here. They're blocking all sorts of things from coming here. They want a state of chaos. They're fighting a psychological war. They're making consistent and constant lies to try to turn people against each other. They want the regime to turn on itself. They want the Libyan people to fight each other. They want everybody to distrust each other. They're flying overhead for no reason. They're flying overhead for no reason to scare people. I'm telling you, there's been days here where they're consistently flying overhead, and they're going to I once even saw a jet with my eyes, and the chemtrail. I saw it, and it was going towards the south. They're going towards Fezzan. There's nothing there to bomb. They're bombing civilians. There's no real command and control or combat-related facilities. They're going in the south, and they're bombing and killing innocent people. They're bombing hospitals. They're bombing universities, food storage facilities. They're bombing things that have nothing to do with saving civilians, and they're killing. They're the ones. This is the Orwellian irony here, that they're talking about saving civilians when they're killing civilians, and they're fueling a civil war deliberately, which they created and manufactured.
And it's the exact same pattern, Marty, that happened during the Gulf War, where the massive infrastructure of Iraq was destroyed in key areas like Baghdad, and then it was repeated again in Serbia, Kosovo, deliberately targeting civilian infrastructure, not so much military targets, and then repeated. Afghanistan's a little bit of a different country, not as developed, but I'm sure the same thing happened there. And the same thing happened again in Iraq in 2003. And between the two Iraq wars, as you well know, Marty, there were those years of sanctions. And I once on my program, I had Dennis Halliday, and I quoted him a couple of times, that he resigned as the humanitarian coordinator, one of two who resigned. And he resigned because he was asked to commit the equivalent of genocide. And he defined genocide as 5,000 Iraqi children deaths per month.
He's a principled man, and all principled men would do the same.
Well, he was a principled man indeed. And the same scheme is being repeated now in Libya as long as this atrocity goes on. And, of course, NATO extended the campaign through September. And if they haven't done what they want to do through September, they'll extend it through December or a year from December or maybe 5 years from December until they wreck the whole country. And you said it well, Marty, this is a war against the people of Libya. It's got nothing to do with Gaddafi. It's got nothing to do with the things that they talk about. It's all about waging war on the Libyan people to defeat them, to defeat their spirit, to kill their bodies, to inflict them with diseases. It is really an immiserating war. And if there ever was a definition of a war crime or against humanity, it's going on every single day in Libya right now.
Oh, definitely. These are Nuremberg trial war crimes. Obama, Cameron, Sarkozy, Clinton, the Emir of Qatar, these people should be taken to The Hague, all right? They should be taken. They're the ones the ICC should be charging, all right? The ICC hasn't even finished looking at anything from Georgia since 2008, but in a matter of days, based on media evidence, which it says, media evidence, most of that was media evidence, looking at international news, it's come up with these convictions or arrest warrants for Colonel Gaddafi and others in Libya. Come on. Any serious person with some rationality and elementary understanding of things will know that this is a bogus political court. And this war has nothing to do with saving lives. It's an outrage, and I'm ashamed that Canada's puppet government is taking the Canadian people on this hijacking, on this act of piracy, on this terrible crime. I spoke to a fellow Canadian here who lives here. I've spoken to Italians who live here. People from all over the world, they're shocked. These people didn't know anything about the media. They used to believe what the media says until they lived it. They could not get the media reports to match with their lives here in Libya from seeing what's on the ground. Somebody here told me they could even tell the difference between a missile bombing and a bomb being dropped, because they've heard so many of them in their civilian resident area. Their area of residence is a civilian neighborhood. They've had neighbors bombed, and this is an outrage.
It's an outrage, and they live it every day. And so many people in Western countries don't understand, especially in America. Americans are so uninformed of what's going on, except the ones who listen to alternative media or read the alternative media. They understand it very well, Marty. But it outrages me. It outrages you. It drives me every day, and you too, to get out truth as best we can. It is so vital to do. This is the way our tax dollars are being spent. People in America, Marty, are being deprived of basic services because we're told by our leaders that the country is broke, so we have to cut the budget. And why do we have to cut the budget? Because we need the money to spend on wars to conquer other countries like Libya. And who knows what comes after Libya? There's a possibility that this thing could explode to be something much bigger than it is. Maybe a general war across the region that would have the potential of getting even bigger than that. And there are other powers in the world, Marty, that are not happy about this, China and Russia specifically. And if suddenly this switched to greater conflict, and I mean endless wars. America has a policy of endless wars, and if this spins too far out of control, who knows what could happen? The unintended consequences that could balloon into something more catastrophic than it already is. But unless people take hold and understand this, Marty, and start getting angry about it, this thing could just keep going on and on and on and on. In other countries, in Libya, of course, because they're going through this, but in some Western countries, they're very unhappy about this. In France, Sarkozy has the lowest approval rating in the history of polls on French presidents. People are upset that this is the way the money is being spent.
But in America, they don't have money for civil servants, social programs. There's people in France who said, put us in Libya, because basically, let us die there, because you're making us die here, because you're not spending money on us. Like, you've cut all the programs here, we have no jobs. So what's the difference between us living in France or living in Libya? Just put us there to die with them. Like, this is ridiculous. It's an outrage. The cycle of violence has to end. Enough is enough. These wars have been going on for years, and people have to mobilize to end this madness, and the state of perpetual war has to end. There's too many bodies. There's too high a price, and there's no just reason behind any of them. There is no real just war. All right, you know, these people are being bombed for no good reason except for the fact that they sit on oil and they've saved money. Libya is one of the few countries that actually saves most of the money it makes every year. It doesn't spend most of it, the money that the country brings in. You know, Goldman Sachs stole a lot of money from this country. All the banks are trying to steal this country's money. HSBC is actually the one that's controlling the new central bank in Benghazi. You know, like, this is all about greed, theft, and destabilization. I mentioned earlier that in a conversation with you that what has happened is Libya is one of the main investors in Africa to develop this continent, to make it stand on its own 2 feet with pride as a unified and strong continent, and to unify all the diverse peoples of this continent, no matter what creed or color or ideology they have, is one, which is a beautiful concept. We want people to work together, cooperate. What this has done is it's set back those investments. It stopped all the projects. In Mali, for example, there's a huge agricultural project that's been abandoned. Now it's going to cause famine. You know, what Libya was doing is it was taking Africa out of a state of dependency. Now that it's out of that state of dependency, like the Americans government, not the American people, of course, and the EU governments, they want these countries, African countries, to be dependent on them. So what they want to do is stop anything that would make them independent. They want these countries to export their raw resources to the U.S. and to the EU, where they'll be manufactured and sent back at a higher price. This is the game they're playing here. And anything that would be progressive and bring up the quality of life here, they want to put an end to it.
Marty, we're out of time. If you're still there a week from now, I hope we can get you back to do more of this, because this is vital to get out. It's one thing to research it and to write about it. It's another thing to be there seeing it with your own eyes, and you see it every single day, and you're getting around, and you're seeing it. Marty, my great thanks for coming on.
It's my pleasure to be there. I told you, you're my dear friend. We've had a lot of conversations about this. I'm sorry. The war has disrupted communications. And my final word is, do not believe the mainstream media. They're blatant liars.
Absolutely. Many thanks, Marty. Well, there you have it from Libya, from Tripoli, Marty Nazemroya. Indeed, he is quite a guy. He's a young guy. We want to segue to the rest of the program with Ellen Brown, but it's riveting for me to listen to what he has to say, and we've had a conversation by phone as well, not on air, and in fact by Skype, so I could see him. He looks like he's been through a lot in about 2.5 weeks or so. I told him it looked like he aged a few years. Being in a war zone, I guess we'll do that to anybody. Anyway, we want to talk about the economy and the QE2, and who better to do that than Ellen Brown? And Ellen does such absolutely fantastic writing on all things financial. I don't know of any writing on financial issues better than what she does, and she just digs out all kinds of information. I do a little bit of writing on that myself, but she just amazes me on the stuff that she digs out and she writes about and explains clearly. And I think most of you know Ellen and her absolutely magnificent book, Web of Debt. It bowled me over when I read it, and I keep saying it all the time on this program. If you haven't gotten a copy, it's in an updated edition. If you haven't gotten a copy of Web of Debt, then get it and read it, because it'll clearly explain in detail what's wrong with our broken system and, most important, how we can fix it. It's not rocket science. The bandits broke it, and the good guys can fix it easily. Again, it's not that hard to fix. It's just a matter of deciding you want to do it. Well, Ellen's newest article, she calls Why QE2 Failed, the money all went offshore. It didn't go to the tooth fairy, did it, Ellen?
Hi, Stephen. The subject of that article was that QE2 was $600 billion that was created by the Federal Reserve, as they do with quantitative easing. They just create it with a computer keystroke, and it was supposed to go to the purchase of long-term government, federal government bonds, which it did, but the government never got the money because ever since the 1930s, if the Federal Reserve wants to buy government bonds, they can't just walk over to the Treasury and buy them. The Treasury can't fund its debt directly through its own central bank, which is how it should be. I would argue that's how the government should be able to fund their own.
Amen. I just throw in a big amen on that.
Just like Canada used to do, and it worked so well. I mean, Canada owns their central bank. The Bank of Canada is owned by the Canadian government, and they used to just walk over to their bank and borrow what they needed, and they funded. That's how they set up their healthcare system and many projects, seaways, et cetera, were all built in the 30s and 40s and 50s using this that ability to borrow from their own central bank. And then in the 70s, there was stagflation, and there was what I would call a misguided economic theory, the Milton Friedman, the idea that inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. Well, that's not true. In this case, price inflation was caused by costs going up, mainly the fact that oil was quadrupled, the price of oil quadrupled, and we know now that that was actually a plot to drive it up in order to force, because the dollar had gone, I'm getting totally off the subject.
Doing great.
Okay. The dollar had gone off the gold standard in 1971, and it immediately started collapsing. And so there was this concern, what were we going to back it with if we couldn't back it with gold? So there was this secret meeting, I think in 1973 in Sweden, where these big banker people got together and decided that they would back it by oil. And so Henry Kissinger leaned on the OPEC countries and made a deal where he said, we are going to make you very rich. We're something to this effect, so it is said. We are going to quadruple the price of oil. But in return, you will sell your oil only in dollars, and you will put the dollars in our Wall Street and London banks. And so all the countries that before thought they had enough reserves, you know, to buy their oil, suddenly they needed dollars. They didn't have nearly enough dollars to buy the oil they needed because the price just quadrupled. And the excuse for the quadrupling was a 9-day war. But that apparently was, you probably know more about it than I do. But anyway, the price went up. Third world countries had to borrow from U.S. banks, and that put them in debt to U.S. banks and London banks, and they've been in debt ever since. I mean, that was the beginning of this whole debt spiral. So that drove prices up. There was the cost push inflation of the quadrupling of oil first, the collapse of the dollar, that you saw that there were these, now all the currencies floated, whereas before they had a rather fixed value. Now suddenly they could be speculated against, and so that drove down the value of a lot of currencies, and that, which caused prices to go up. So prices were going up not because governments were borrowing from their central banks and inflating the money supply. Prices were going up because costs were going up. But that was used as an excuse to discourage all governments from either printing their own money or turning to their own central banks. And we know that's where the Bank for International Settlements, that's their whole push, is that the principal job of a central bank is to maintain a stable currency, which means don't inflate the currency, which means don't print money and don't borrow from your own central bank. And so your interview on Libya was excellent, the part I heard the last 15 minutes. And I think that's what it's all about, that Libya stepped out of that system. They were printing their own money. They were borrowing from their own central bank. They funded everything in the country. I mean, as your interviewee said, they don't borrow. They don't go into debt. They save their money because they don't need to borrow. They fund it themselves. And that's what everybody could do. That's what we could be doing, too.
Oh, you wrote about it, Ellen, and I did, too. And, Gaddafi had his own publicly owned central bank, the way all central banks should be, so governments, nations can control their own money. You should not franchise it out to a private banker so they can steal the nation's resources and screw everybody in the country except, the rich people who always benefit under a system like this. But, the other 90% or more in countries throughout the Middle East, it's probably 99% at least that really get the raw end of this deal. And Gaddafi did the right thing, along with many other right things that he did, Ellen, and that's why he got in trouble with the Imperial West, Imperial Washington. They don't tolerate despots or Democrats who have the audacity to want to serve their own people ahead of bankers. I mean, that's a very serious offense.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think his biggest offense, I mean, if he had just done it for his own country and stayed under the radar, it would have been all right, but he was attempting to organize the whole African continent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Use only the gold dinar. Don't sell oil in dollars, or don't sell resources in general in dollars, which you can see how crushing that would be to us. And he was funding various projects and setting up an alternative. It was an African IMF. It's rather like Hugo Chavez. I mean, what he did wrong was was to try to organize the Latin American countries.
Oh, he did well. He had modest success, not too much. A little smidgen of interest here and there, but basically the big boys like Brazil, Argentina, Chile, they're still with the old system. A little less intense than the neoliberal 90s, but it's a slightly less intense neoliberal new millennium. So he had a little bit. I mean, even Chavez isn't perfect. He's still... I can still remember an old article I wrote, Ellen, when things were booming in Venezuela before the economic debacle set in, and there was a line I quoted from the Financial Times that said, quote, I still remember the line, quote, unquote, bankers are having a party in Venezuela. They were making so much money in Venezuela, even though Venezuela has a more responsible central bank policy. Even more responsible after that Financial Times article. Within the last year or 18 months or so, it got more responsible. But still, I think 70% of the country controlled by private banks. Oh, my God, are we at a break already? That's because we have this segment from Libya. Let's take a break, Ellen, and we'll come back.
News anywhere on the internet. ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, your number one source for everything progressive.
Political Analysis, a 21st century news and public affairs program featuring voices and views you won't hear in the corporate-sponsored media. I'm Sandy Leon Best, editor and publisher of Solar Times and host of Political Analysis, aired every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. Political Analysis features independent perspectives from some of the world's most progressive writers, activists, and visionaries. To listen to past shows, visit Political Analysis archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/political-analysis. Political Analysis, a groundbreaking look at the world.
Philosophy Talk is changing to a new time every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Ken Taylor and John Perry discuss both contemporary and classical philosophical theories and apply it to problems we face every day with a lighthearted and laugh-out-loud approach. Philosophy Talk every Wednesday at 10 a.m. on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Hello! This is Deborah Wolf, best-selling author and award-winning radio host of Animal Magnet Pet Radio. You can listen live to me every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern for the best pet radio in America, Canada, and beyond. Hard-hitting pet issues, animal news, training tips, tricks, games, and quirky pet trivia, plus the A-list pet guests each week. Or listen anytime to past shows at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. Listen to this show so you can be good to your animals.
This is PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Article on QE2 and why the money never made it into the economy, which is what money has to do to grow an economy. It's like blood in the veins. You know, you got the veins and you got the blood, but if you don't put the blood in the veins, the body's going to have a little bit of problem here and there. Well, in the case of the body's going to die. Well, I mean, the country is slowly dying. I've got a question for you, Ellen. You know, every time I read one of your articles, you teach me stuff I never knew before. And you mentioned in this one, and you mentioned on here, that before the Banking Act of 1935, the government could borrow directly from its own central bank. Now, I thought the 1913 Federal Reserve Act changed that. Not so?
Well, the Federal Reserve Act set up the Federal Reserve note as the national currency, and then the government would have to borrow Federal Reserve notes. But they could do it directly from the Fed. They didn't have to go through broker-dealers.
What did they actually do then between 1913 and 1935?
They would borrow the money, but they actually paid the interest to the Federal Reserve, and that was the thing that in the 1960s, Wright Patman, who was then head of the House Banking and Currency Committee, saw what they were up to and said, "You boys are printing our money and lending it to us at interest. That's not right. You know, you should be nationalized. The Fed should be a federal agency." And in order to avoid that, they agreed to rebate their profits after deducting their costs. Before that, they didn't. They actually got the profits. So it was a profit-generating private institution printing the national currency and lending it to the government. A huge scam. So in this QE2, though, what happened was that in 1935, it appeared that it was too easy for the government to just trot over and fund its debt through the central bank, and that Congress would therefore spend too much. And so to avoid that, they put in that provision that the Fed would have to buy on the open market, meaning they would buy from private dealers. Well, now there are 20 dealers who are authorized to sell bonds to the Fed. These are all banks, I guess. Maybe weren't. Yeah, I think they're all banks. And interestingly, 12 of them are foreign banks. More than half are foreign banks. I mean, they're foreign banks with branches in the U.S., of course. And so in this particular quantitative easing, too, the $600 billion that was supposed to go to purchase long-term government bonds, the foreign banks had – they do it at a secret auction, and whoever puts in the best bid wins. So needless to say, the foreign banks had the most incentive to win the bid because – they wanted the cash. They've got that problem in the EU, you know, where they've got a serious liquidity problem right now. Plus, they could make a lot of money with this carry trade because our Fed set the Fed funds rate at 0.25%. 0.2 is what it's at. And that means banks can borrow from each other at incredibly low rates, so they can get money really cheaply. But that's not true in other countries. So they can get this very cheap money in the U.S. in dollars, euro dollars, and then invest it at a higher rate. So that carry trade is what has been driving up commodity prices, et cetera.
So I guess, I guess the dollar has replaced the yen as the currency, the carry trade currency of choice, Ellen?
Yeah. So, but it's the same principle. Yeah,
same idea.
We followed the Japanese. We did the same thing the Japanese did, which was drop the Fed funds rate to almost zero.
And Japan still pretty much has it pretty close to rock bottom. As an aside, has Japan at all raised its interest rate even a smidgen?
I haven't actually looked, but I doubt it, because if they raise the rate, that increases what they have to pay on their debt, and you know they have a huge debt. So,
well, an economist who comes on this program all the time, Ellen Jack Rasmus, he said the last two times that he's been on, and I think Japan was heading into trouble anyway, but the earthquake, tsunami, Fukushima disaster just really threw a monkey wrench into everything, and he said Japan is already back in recession.
Oh, yeah. That's too bad.
So they're in trouble. He said Australia's in recession also. And it seems to me I ran across something that said the Australian Central Bank raised interest rates. If Australia's in recession, what in the heck are they raising interest rates for? Well, you know,
yeah.
I mean,
well, and a recession means there's not enough money in the economy, so they need to get more out there. So, yeah, low interest rates.
Make it more attractive.
Right.
I think their return on government securities was reasonably higher than anything in the West, either in Europe, Western Europe, and here in America. I don't know what the Eastern European situation is. I don't think it's good, but I don't know what the yield on their government debt is. I don't know that I want to own any Latvian debt or Greek debt, for that matter.
Yeah. Well, the secret of the Japanese economy is that they owe the money to themselves.
The postal system.
The biggest holders of the debt are the Bank of Japan, which is obviously the central bank owned by the government, and the Japan Post Bank, also owned by the government. It's a big postal savings bank where the Japanese people put their money, save their money. So they don't worry about running up a debt. It's basically... That's what we should be doing, too. We should be borrowing from our own central bank. The Federal Reserve should actually be federal. We should be able to borrow from it, basically interest-free, because we would own the bank and generate the money we need. I mean, we, too, are actually in a deflationary situation where there's not enough money out there. Everybody thinks there is because gold and silver and oil are going up, but gold and silver and oil are a very small part of what counts in prices. In fact, I was reading that the biggest thing in prices is actually wages. Two-thirds of prices are wages, and they haven't gone up at all. And then housing is a huge factor in price, and housing, of course, is going down. So gold and silver and oil don't tip the scales on that.
Oh, yeah. Housing, I think by far, Ellen, is the single most valuable asset that most people have. And housing is in a serious, serious depression that, if I remember correctly, passed either equaled or passed the depths of the 1930s. And the stuff that I read says it still has a long way to go. I mean, it really is shocking how much trouble the U.S. housing market is in, and it could be years before it even stabilizes, let alone recovers. We could be looking into the next decade after 2020, maybe to see any real recovery in housing. You get into a mess like this, and of course it built up over a good many years. Especially in the 1990s and until 2007, and then it started coming apart, and it really is serious. I put out an article yesterday, not on housing, Ellen, but I called on the dismal state of the economy after that jobs report came out on Friday. and I call my article The Great Unraveling. And I quoted Obama went out in the Rose Garden. I mean, he should have hidden in the White House basement. That's what he should have done. He came out in the Rose Garden. He gave a long statement, but I just excerpted a couple of comments, and I said his best shot was saying, quote, "We still have a long way to go and a lot of work to do to give the people the security and opportunity they deserve." And my comment is, if you did your damn job, we wouldn't be in the damn mess we're in now, and you wouldn't have to come out in the Rose Garden and make a silly comment like that, that you're the greatest cause for having it happen in the first place. I mean the policies in place have literally made a bad situation worse, aside from, you know, the system we have where the banks run everything and the government salutes and is beholden to going to the banks to get a loan with its own money. I mean, talk about a crazy system, Ellen. I mean, the system really is crazy, and most nations have the exact same system.
Yeah.
Just letting private bankers, you know, it's like putting somebody else in charge of our personal lives. You know, we can't go out unless we ask permission, like a child and a parent. We can't go outside unless we first ask permission. We can't do this unless we ask permission, because we have privatized all of our rights to an outside authority. We've done it on the most important authority, the ability to control the nation's money. There's nothing more important than that. And we've let bankers run it all. And of course, as long as they run it all, they're gonna run us into the ground. They're gonna run people into the ground. And that's why we have an awful mess in our hands now. But periodically, over the last almost 100 years, we've had these episodes up and down, the Great Depression. The worst until the current years, and we'll have to wait until they're over to see just how bad this thing really is. But I think before it's over, Ellen, it is going to be real, real bad, worse than we've seen so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all these regulations are based on a bad economic model. I mean, we just don't have a proper understanding of what money is. That if we could, the ideal model was the Bank of Pennsylvania in Benjamin Franklin's colony of Pennsylvania, where, or the colonies in general, when they issued government scrip, it was to pay for goods and services. So what the money was basically a receipt for goods and services. Somebody delivered something to the government, and in return they got this little paper receipt, a piece of scrip. And then they could trade that in the community for an equivalent value. That's what money is. So we, the community, acknowledge that somebody has delivered goods and services to us, and we acknowledge that we will make good on, I mean, they may not want one particular, that's what money is. You know, it's fungible. You can spend it on what you need. You've delivered to the community, and now the community will deliver to you. So we've gotten so divorced from that that it's all speculative numbers that don't have anything to do with productivity. So here's the Fed creating $600 billion that should go directly over to the government to spend on goods and services. In other words, to build infrastructure, pay for their employees, all the things that government does. But instead, this $600 billion went to buy old bonds, cashing out those bonds, and then the cash is used to speculate in the carry trade, et cetera, or, I lost my train of thought. Anyway, so now we have $1.6 trillion in excess reserves sitting in bank accounts, and we have a $1.6 trillion deficit. Now, as Ron Paul pointed out, they could just cancel out all the government securities that the Fed holds, which is also about that amount, and they would solve the deficit problem. Because all the securities that the Fed holds, it got a hold of by printing money and going out into the open market and buying the things. But instead of doing the logical, obvious thing, which is just allow the government to spend money, acknowledging that money is receipts for goods and services delivered to the community, instead, we have to go through all these strange steps that allow all these manipulations that then allow speculators to get in there and make a lot of money from money making money without actually contributing any services to the community.
I did another article, Ellen, that had information I found on why the stock market has rocketed so much, whether it's going to keep doing this much longer, who knows. But the reason that it doubled from 2009 into 2011, and all of the benefits went to the bankers and other corporate interests, and they broke down the profits that have been generated over this 2+ year period. And I forget the precise percentage, but it was something like 93% or 94% corporations benefiting from. So, of course, their stock valuations went up, and ordinary people got only about 6% or 7%, which means virtually nothing spread over the vast majority of people in the country. So it's not unfair in my mind to refer to a Main Street depression, but these major corporate interests are doing fine. And one other thing that you mentioned in your article, and I mentioned it in my Great Unraveling article, that big corporations don't need to borrow the way small companies need to borrow. Big corporations can go to the bond market and float their own bonds and raise money, and they don't have to go to banks and mm-hmm. and worry whether banks are lending or not. But small businesses are completely different. They are dependent on banks. So if banks aren't lending, small businesses don't have an easy way to borrow money to sustain their businesses and grow them. And it's been a while, but I have a neighbor on my floor right next to me, and he began a small business, and it was months back. It's been a while. I don't know what he's going through now, but months back he complained that he just can't borrow money. Now, he was a real small business. I hope it's a little bigger now. But he just can't borrow money. You go to the banks and they don't want to talk to you. And that's a serious problem, and nothing has been done to alleviate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know somebody, too, who has a small business, and he used to have a credit line. And, I mean, nothing changed in his business at all, but they cut off the credit line, and now he has to do it with a credit card. Well, that doubles the interest rate right there. And it's only because his bank was taken over by a big Wall Street bank and they just changed their policies. So, yeah, and that was my article was too long, so I'm putting this into another article. But the other strange thing, the reason that the $1.6 trillion is sitting in reserve accounts instead of being out there in the economy is that the Federal Reserve is paying 0.25% interest on these reserves, which is the same as the Fed funds rate. So the banks won't borrow from each other. Why should they? Why should they lend their money to the other banks when they can get the same interest rate from the Fed and they don't have to let go of their money and it's absolutely secure, whereas if they gave it to another bank, it's possible the other bank might go bankrupt and they wouldn't get it back. So that's frozen the interbank lending market. Well, that doesn't hurt the big banks. They're the ones that have all these reserves, so what do they care? But the little banks are the little local banks are the ones that make the loans to the little local businesses, and that is where the crunch has come. The local businesses can't get credit because the local banks don't. If they extend a credit line, they don't know when the borrower is going to hit up this credit line. So they have to be able to borrow from the other banks for the interbank lending market is an important part of being able to extend credit lines, and that's how they make loans to small businesses. You know, they start with the credit line, and then the business, when they need a little extra money because it, you know, the way business works, you got to pay your workers and materials first before you get paid. So you need the loan, but you don't know exactly how much and when. So the bank doesn't know how much in one either, so they need to be able to borrow to even all that up. So if that interbank lending market is frozen because nobody wants to let go of their excess reserves, because why should they, because the Fed is paying them for it, then credit lines wind up getting cut.
It sounds like a perfect system, Ellen, to perpetuate an economic calamity and make it worse. It's like having a sick patient, and you know the cure, but you won't give the cure to the patient, so the patient just remains an illness, and if the illness is bad enough, then it could become a very serious situation. I mean, we're 3 years into this, over 3 years, 2008, 9, 10, 3.5 years into this mess, really more than that, began in the fall of 2007, and it certainly was brewing before it ever started making headlines. Other people, some people knew about it, not in the mainstream, and wrote about, they sure did write about it. I mean, I wrote about trouble coming because I quoted honest people, including you, explaining some of the stuff going on before the storm broke. But this thing just keeps festering and going on and on and on. And here we see the symptoms emerging again. You know, we come up with these concocted ways of deciding whether we're in recession or not in recession. So June 2009, the National Bureau of Economic NBER declared the end of the recession. Well, but most people in the country, they don't know anything about an end of a recession. They're still suffering dismally.
Worse,
and,
yeah,
you see it in consumer confidence reports. You see it in how they rate politicians. Why Obama is holding up as well as he is, Ellen, I don't know. But the Congress, I've seen different polling numbers on Congress, one where they had the Congress at a 20% approval rating, and it seems to me I saw another one that was down around 11%. I mean, it's pretty dismal. Let's just call it 20% or in the teens somewhere. I mean, it's pretty dismal. And Obama sunk to about 46%. He jumps around a few percentage points, a little higher, a little lower. But why he hasn't sunk right along with Congress, I don't know. And I've kept saying all along, sooner or later he has to. He has to. Because how long can people suffer, how much, before they blame it where the blame should be put? And that's on the political establishment that got them into this mess in the first place and isn't doing anything to help. And if somebody isn't getting help, who do they blame? I mean, you blame the people that hold the offices for not doing it. And the only debate going on, the only financial debate going on in Washington is how much can we cut? Not the military budget, not the corporate budget, well, the only corporate stuff they want to cut is the corporate income tax rate. But I don't even know why they debate that, Ellen, because nominally it's 35%, but these companies can game the system so well, so you get a company like GE, and they make billions of dollars in profit, and they have been able to game the system to get billions of dollars back in a rebate. Now imagine if you and I tried that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and it's little companies that get hurt, and it's the little companies that do all the hiring, so that's why there are no jobs. It really is alarming. I know so many people who are totally qualified, like engineers and people with degrees, who can't get jobs. And they're like, I know somebody whose unemployment was just cut in half, so now he's there, and he has no family. So now what do you do? I mean, like, you could literally be homeless with a PhD these days.
You know, that's almost too shocking to believe, but I know it's true. I know it's true. And the jobs that people get are really low-paying jobs, low-benefit and no-benefit jobs. So you read about McDonald's hiring or Walmart hiring. I mean, these aren't decent jobs. And most of the jobs that are being created, even though there actually are more jobs lost some months than created, they have this crazy birth-death model, the birth-death model, which refers to supposed hiring done by new businesses that aren't picked up in the surveys. So in good times, maybe they hire more, but based on this model. But in hot times, they're not hiring. At best, they're not hiring. At worst, they're letting people go. And these numbers vary, but they can come out lots of times to a number on the order of 100 to 200,000 a month, fictitiously created jobs out of thin air. And then I remember reading, and I mentioned it in one of my articles, reading in an article that Paul Craig Roberts wrote, that the model used by the Bureau of Labor Statistics automatically adds 33,000 jobs every month based on what? I don't know. They just automatically add that plus the birth-death model, and they come up with this fictitious number. And the BLS itself, and I quoted this in my Great Unraveling article, I've quoted it before, I repeated it, that the BLS itself says that the confidence level in the monthly number they come out with, in the monthly headline employment number, and then there's a second one, a household survey, but the monthly headline number that the business press reports is accurate plus or minus 464,000 jobs, if I remember the exact figure they mentioned, plus or minus 464,000 jobs. What kind of a number is that?
Right, and if you're one of those 465,000 people, you notice the difference. Yeah, I remember somebody said the average temperature in Los Angeles is 72, but you don't know. You know, on any particular day, it might be 105 or...
Well, the average temperature in the U.S., let's say, is 60 degrees. Well, it might be 20 below in Butte, Montana.
Right, exactly.
And 90 in Miami.
Right.
Oh my goodness! I mean, it's crazy the way stuff comes out, and people don't really realize how the information is manipulated, misreported, suppressed, and they're being manipulated, and they're too busy watching the ball game to really care about it. That's what gets me, Ellen. People are so distracted by the bread and circuses that they refuse to get active and protect their own welfare and their kids' welfare. I say it all the time. I write it all the time, and literally the rights of people in this country, including a right to a decent job, a decent living, a decent future, a roof over your head. I mean, these rights are being taken away, and we're almost out of time. But again, I'll just highlight, then I'll let you wrap up, that the big financial debate in Washington is how much to cut. How many trillions to cut? And that's what's being debated right now. Instead of how much stimulus needs to be added, how much do we need to cut? Is that a sick system or what?
It is. And the Chinese are doing it the other way, and look how well they're doing. I mean, they know that when they have an economic problem, they need to put more money out there, and that's what they are doing, and they're thriving.
They sure are surviving, and they're thriving. Even when China goes through hard times, it sounds like heaven compared to what people go through here. And I don't imagine it's too easy running a country with a hundred million people in it. That sounds like a king-size job to me, Ellen. I would not want to be the ruler of China. Or even the mayor of Chicago, for that matter. But I could have an easier time with Chicago than I could with China. Ellen, we are out of time. Oh, my goodness. You'll be on the program next month from a different location, right?
Yes, I think I'll be in Switzerland. I'm going to London, Malaysia, Switzerland, Germany, and Spain. I'll be gone for 2 months.
Well, I'll check back with you. We got you on later in August. Sure. And whether you're at home in Switzerland or on the moon, if I can reach you, Ellen, I'm going to get you on the air.
Thanks. Oh, yeah, you'll be able to reach me. Great.
Many thanks,
great
Ellen. Talk to you soon. And join us next week, of course, Thursdays, 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Why else do I always say make this a regular habit? Where else do you get guests like Ellen Brown and truthful reports from Libya and all the other important topics discussed with distinguished guests on air in depth? The truth. It's the Truth Hour every time.